Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine. Joining us today is Dr. Diane Davis. She's the program director of the Medical Laboratory Science Program and the chair for the Department of Health Sciences at Salisbury University in Salisbury, Maryland. She's also the author of the book Laboratory Safety, a Self-Assessment Workbook, the second edition of which is forthcoming from ASC Press. Thanks so much for chatting with us about lab safety, Dr. Davis.
Well, you're most welcome, Kelly. This is quite a privilege to be able to do this. So thanks to everyone for taking the time to listen. So my charge today is to talk a little bit about laboratory safety and some thoughts related to, in particular, a safety culture in the laboratory as well as patient safety. You know, when we were children, when it came to safety, we were all taught to be rule followers. We were told to look both ways before you cross the street. Don't run with scissors, etc. That mentality usually persists in all of us well into adulthood, and it certainly does serve us well in many venues, including the laboratory. There are an abundance of rules to follow that demonstrably reduce injury, infection, and harm in the laboratory, and we certainly need to learn the rules. All that said, however, a generic set of laboratory safety rules cannot anticipate every situation or nuance within that situation. In addition to that, the mission of every laboratory influences what activities are performed there. And those activities may on occasion conflict with optimal rule book safety practice. In a hospital, for example, the laboratory may need to provide testing that's crucial for patient care and patient safety, but the chemicals needed are hazardous to perform that testing, and there are no safer alternatives. In that situation, laboratory safety and the quality of performance must be therefore simultaneously managed in order to optimize both within the confines of a laboratory's unique situation. There is no published set of rules that will do this for you. It requires careful analysis and planning, not only within the laboratory, but also with the larger organization and stakeholders in that larger organization. Now I want to turn my attention to what it means to be a safety culture. In an organization where there is a safety culture, safety is a consideration in every process that the organization conducts. New initiatives, new purchases, space renovations, and the like are evaluated not just for how much they cost or how well they meet the needs of the institution, although those are certainly important parameters. They are also evaluated for new risks and ways to ensure safety with these new initiatives. In a safety culture, lower cost or expediency do not take the precedence over safety, but every effort is made to ensure safety is without undue cost or burden. A spirit of cooperation is therefore necessary from all parties to commit the resources for best safety practices while being realistic and responsible with decisions. Now, a safety culture, as I've described it, will never be successful if safety is a concern only at the managerial level. Every member of the laboratory must have an individual imperative to keep safe and encourage safety in others. This includes being proactive in recognizing potential hazards or flaws in the system and communicating them. It's important to develop what I call a no-fault atmosphere in which both staff and managers can communicate honestly about concerns and areas of improvement. No one should be belittled or penalized for any concern. This is absolutely the fastest way to squelch participation and communication. Accident and near-miss analysis is vital to improving safety protocols. In the so-called safety culture that I'm describing, the goal is to gather as much data as possible about accidents and near-misses and determine how to prevent it from happening again. The process should be blamed before the person. Punishment for non-conformance to standard protocols should only be considered very carefully. We need good data to do accident analysis. Workers will be very reluctant to self-report or give honest accounts of what they witnessed if they believe punishment or termination will result. Of course, repeated and willful violations of safety protocols may be grounds for dismissal or termination. But in a safety culture, you ask, why are the violations occurring? Is the safety gear too uncomfortable that we're requiring? Is the protocol overly difficult and time-consuming? In a safety culture, workers would collaborate with managers to make the right way to do something also the easiest way. Worker comfort is maximized to ensure compliance with protocols, and incidents are viewed as opportunities for communication, learning, and improvement. So in a safety culture, root cause analysis is valued for the change it will bring, not for figuring out where to assign blame. As with most things, being proactive rather than reactive prevents accidents and improves safety. Regular, honest communication is crucial, and ongoing safety analysis should be a scheduled routine event, not management of a crisis. Education and training are always vital, but it shouldn't be just teaching the rules. Humans are extraordinarily motivated by self-preservation. So when the training includes not just the rules, not just the protocol, but the reasons for it, compliance is going to be more likely. Safety managers should never be intimidated by suggestions for better, faster, more comfortable ways of achieving safety goals. Workers are more likely to follow a protocol that they helped design. And when they feel their input was valued, they will continue to give it. In the epitome of a safety culture, worker input is consistently solicited, recognized, and even rewarded. The ultimate achievement of medical laboratories is successful outcomes for the patient. This goal and laboratory safety are not mutually exclusive, but there are points of conflict. The Institute of Medicine's quality aims to improve healthcare delivery are patient safety, patient-centeredness, efficiency, effectiveness, equity, and timeliness. Safety protocols in laboratories should not compromise these goals, but clearly they can. An easy example is the quality goal of timeliness. There is significant pressure on medical laboratory workers to produce results quickly for the sake of the patient. But workers who are stressed, rushing, and multitasking can be more likely to cut corners and be sloppy about safety. Therefore, many decisions regarding hiring and staffing have direct impact on both worker and patient safety. As I said previously, managing laboratory safety must be integrated into the whole of an organization's mission so that neither the mission, patient safety, nor laboratory worker safety are compromised.
Thanks, Dr. Davis, for talking about this. I do have a few questions. You talked a little bit about getting buy-in from employees, but what about when employees want certain changes to happen that will make their workplace safer, but administration is slow to act because of economic factors? How can employees get buy-in from managers and administration?
Well, first I'd say that the workers have to do their homework. The managers and administration will be more easily swayed by data and accurate information as opposed to just the attitude of, we want this. OSHA and NIOSH, which is a division at the CDC, provide loads of information on their websites regarding the best safety practices. They also collect data on accidents and incidents in the workplace. For example, national data on injuries with sharps, including what brands of devices were in use, is publicly available. Information is power when it comes to influencing your boss. Workers also must understand that collaboration is a two-way street. If they can find ways to improve efficiency or cut costs to justify or offset a safety improvement, then managers will almost certainly be more willing to make the change. If workers show that they're willing to exert themselves in some way to get a change they want, their requests will have higher validity and will be more respected. As a mom, I could always tell how badly my children wanted a particular toy if they were willing to put some of their own money towards it. And workers in the laboratory really probably need to think in that manner as well.
That's a good point. Employee involvement decisions usually result in compliance with the ultimate decision. If a person feels ownership of a rule, they'll be more likely to follow it. What are some ways to encourage that employee involvement? And also, how can we encourage management to involve employees in the first place instead of taking a just-do-what-I-say sort of stance?
Well, of course. And I, first of all, I think a lot of people will think I'm absolutely silly for saying something like this. But I truly believe that humans really only engage in behavior that rewards them in some way. Significant effort is rarely expended by anyone unless there's a payoff somewhere. And I don't just mean money. I think a lot of people think of rewards meaning money. But in fact, loads of money really are not necessary. Simple things like making it a requirement on an annual evaluation that workers give one suggestion to improve safety to get a fully satisfactory evaluation will require those workers to observe and think and analyze when ordinarily they would not be motivated to do so. And clearly this doesn't cost anything and it's not an onerous task to set someone to. You can get a little more fancy and have contests like the safety suggestion of the month, and perhaps with 12 people giving a safety suggestion each month, have an annual safety suggestion of the year to cap off the process. And the rewards can be really low cost. They can be pictures of the staff that are recognized on bulletin boards, a coupon for free lunch in the employee cafeteria. It doesn't have to involve a lot, but at least it's acknowledged and recognized. You don't have to give people a trip to the Bahamas just to raise the profile of safety issues in your laboratory if you think creatively. As for involving management, this is what I'm talking about with regard to a safety culture. If everybody from the top on down has safety as part of the culture, then this naturally evolves. No one would be considered exempt from promoting safety in such a culture. And it would simply be a duty of all administrators to have a provision in their laboratory management plan to collaborate with workers to promote safety, and similarly on their annual evaluations, they might have to illustrate to upper levels of management how they did that. In particular, managers should be forbidden to be the sole evaluator of safety equipment and protocols. They should probably be made to provide evidence that they surveyed their workers for input. If possible, nothing should be purchased without a committee of employees or all the employees just taking a look at what's being purchased and trying it out and giving their input in a non-critical way. I'm not saying that managers should not have the ability to make that final decision, but the time that it takes to get the input from those who actually may be affected by the decision, in my mind, is never wasted.
As we know, the laboratory is not actually in a bubble, even though sometimes we like to think that we are. What are some examples of lab safety measures that also increase patient safety?
Well, I think an important example is my assertion that the safest way must also be the easiest. So if we think broadly and we think about a particular task to be accomplished, we're thinking about the actual safety with the instruments and the chemicals and so forth. But there's an input, there's an output of that activity. So that collectively, what's the safest way to do something, not just from the physical safety, but also the patient safety that is woven into looking at what is the easiest thing to do that would be fastest and most efficient and safe, and so that when you can, in a holistic way, evaluate a task for not just its physical safety, but its patient safety, and create a protocol that simultaneously is trying to answer both, then that obviously dovetails with the quality goals, such as efficiency and timeliness that we talked about from the Institution of Medicine. That also probably reduces the difficulty of the task. And when you reduce the difficulty of the task, that inherently, in my mind, probably reduces errors that affect patient safety as well. We know, because the laboratory is not in a cost-cutting bubble, that's for sure, that the current healthcare climate is a climate of cost-cutting. My opinion is that understaffing is more prevalent, that when you're looking at trying to hold down costs, one of the first things you do is to try to only hire the people that you need. And in my humble opinion, understaffing is under-recognized as both a worker safety and a patient safety issue. So part of the entire evaluation of the laboratory management is to right-size the laboratory staff. And that has the dual benefits of improving worker and patient safety. It's going to reduce the tendency toward rushing and multitasking that can be really prevalent in medical laboratories. And when I think of patient safety, I think of avoidable errors, specimen misidentification, transfusion of the wrong type of blood, failure to catch an aberrant result, etc. Almost every error I can think of can be reduced by having enough people to do the job and a process that makes the right way to do something the easiest way, as I said. Now, kind of expanding a little bit on some of the themes of the safety culture, this really does dovetail with patient safety. When we talk about accidents and near-miss analysis, well, those things apply to patient safety as well. So that there, when there are those specimen misidentifications, those aberrant results that didn't get caught, the same things that we talk about of the laboratory looking at what we did, how we did it, when did we do it, and analyzing what we did and how we can do it from and prevent the same incident from happening again. So the thinking is not different. The process is not different. If you're thinking globally of laboratory safety and patient safety, it's the same way, so that looking, or the same kind of thinking, so that you put those two things together and you're able to look at all your processes through two lenses to come out with one protocol at the other end that improves both patient safety and physical safety at the same time.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Davis. You've given us a lot to think about. Hopefully our listeners will go back and take this information back to their laboratories and help make everyone happier and healthier and safer employees. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
It was certainly my pleasure.